This is Julio Rodriguez, and this is the Lookout Landing Podcast.
I'm the same one you seen in the classroom, ayy. We was chillin' in the style, making crowds move, ayy. Young K still posted in the A like a brain. No chain your boys got will make my neck fucking bang. Hanging on your speaker, banging on your speaker, baby. Need to find a reason to make you believe me, baby.
Welcome back to the Lookout Landing Podcast. Thank you, as always, for joining us on this, our first episode of the year 2021, which is weird to say out loud, but also a year that is sure to be award-winning and critically acclaimed for everyone on this show. My name is Matthew Robertson, staff writer and podcast host at Lookout Landing, and I'm joined today by Kate Prusser, managing editor of Lookout Landing. Kate,
Hello.
How's the new year treating you? We're a week in and things are already bizarre.
Yeah, they 2021 came in flexing. So you're like, oh, heard you hated 2020. Well, wait until you get a load of me, baby.
Feels like we intentionally walked 2020 and now 2021 is pissed off.
Yes.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I feel like we already have like a 2-0 count on 2021. Like we gotta get this ship right.
Oh yeah, we're gonna see a lot of pitches to hit, hopefully, in 2021. But Kate, as you know, the Mariners continue to sort of make middling moves, a pickup here, a pickup there. I guess like 20 minutes before we started, they announced that Rowenis Elias is back, and I'm sure we'll have more complete thoughts on the site later about that, but.
Yes,
it's been a lot of things like that.
There were like four, but obviously Rowenis Elias has name recognition among the fan base. So, you know, that felt like a good move. And obviously, like, Rowenis likes it here. His family likes it here. They know it here. It's a little surprised he couldn't get a major league deal after being part of the championship Washington Nationals just very recently. But, you know, he's getting up there. Hopefully the curveball is still what the curveball was, and you know, he'll be a really nice option in Tacoma.
Yeah. All love to Rowenis Elias and his family. But as the Mariners continue to kind of make C-minus to maybe C-plus moves, we have decided to go national. So today's episode is going to focus more on the state of Major League Baseball as a whole. And to do that, we are joined by a columnist at the New York Daily News, host of the Five and Dive podcast on Baseball Prospectus, and a New York resident during a time when one of the New York teams is spending money on big-name players, just probably not the one you'd expect. It is Bradford William Davis. What's going on, man? How are you?
Yo, thanks for having me. I'm doing, you know, I mean, bad, like, as a society, but, like, But I personally like you know, I've literally and figuratively survived 2020. So you know, I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful to have the luxury of podcasting with my homies.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because I think we also do need to normalize saying I'm doing bad. Like, I think that's more comforting. That's way more comforting to hear than like, oh, you know, I'm doing all right. Like, I want to suffer with people together.
Yeah, yeah. No more projecting brave fronts. Like, in 2021, we're telling it how it is. Like, I'm doing bad, because it's not a lie for most of us. Saying the other thing is a lie. So, yeah, I mean, I feel like all of 2020, and it looks like reaching into 2021 is going to be a lot of, like, accepting that things are, that figuring out like what to be thankful for and what you have privilege to have, and also like just accepting that things are bad and being really honest about that. So I appreciate the energy that you're bringing, Bradford.
I promise I will be a fun listener, guys. But no, just want to keep it real.
We have fun things to talk about. I mean, I imagine it's pretty fun to be covering the Mets right now. So.
Yeah, I mean, shoot, like, it's, you know, there's two teams, I guess, in baseball that, like, care about, you know, baseball is not as, like, a, you know, money laundering scheme for their real estate ventures, but for the sport as it is, you know, and seeking to maximize the joy that can be found in it. You know, one is, of course, the San Diego Padres, and then, you know, one is this team in Queens. And yeah, you know, like, you know, you're obviously listening. If you're listening today, like, you know, Thursday the 7th, you know, and a few hours ago, the Mets acquired Francisco Lindor and Carlos Carrasco from the Indians for, well, excuse me, the baseball team, to be named later. Excuse me, but yeah, you know, they swung a blockbuster deal. They did not give a tremendous amount of talent, you know, from the team, or at least a realized
Nope,
talent.
no, they sure didn't.
and got, you know, one of the best players in baseball and a bona fide frontline pit, you know, starting pitcher, to, you know, to needs, you know, particularly the pitcher, honestly, you know, and Carrasco. But, like, you know, but Lindor is so great that if he's available, you get him and you just figure it out later. Unless you have another Lindor, then you're fine. But, like, you know, but otherwise, like, yeah, man, they look like they're going to take off and be a true contender, you know, in the National League and actually be in the mix for a World Series, and that's a lot of fun. And I don't think they're done yet either. So like, yeah, it's cool to be able to watch the joy and excitement to see all these players on the Mets, like, tweeting about how happy they are that, you know, the team is trying. Like,
personally,
you
I'm
don't,
so
you don't see
happy
that, you don't
for
see that too
Marcus
often anymore.
Stroman. I'm big happy for Marcus Stroman. Just hit his series of delighted. He was tweeting in a fit of delight today, and it was really fun to watch. I thought it was an interesting timing because I feel like there had been this big honeymoon period with Cohen and the Mets and the fans where he was saying all the right things. And then the Padres started making all those moves, and Mets fans, it felt like, got, because it does not take much to wound a Mets fan. They are hair trigger with the reactionaryism-ness, which is fair. I mean, they've been hurt for a long time. So I felt like the honeymoon period was quickly drawing to a close. And then Steve Cohen was like, you know, it was like that, like wheeling out the big surprise at the end of the birthday party after the kid is sulking because they think they're not going to get what they want. So the timing of it, I was just laughing about that today.
Yeah, you know, Kate, I mean, and I don't, again, like you know, implied, I don't really blame Mets fans. I mean, we got like 5 weeks to like pitch some catcher support. Is that right? I mean, like, you know, it's coming up pretty soon.
Yeah, no, it's in, we're already doing our 40 and 40 countdown, which is 40 business days. We're on, like, I don't know, day five of them will be tomorrow, 'cause yeah, we started on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Yeah. So
So
so 35 business days, and that's not until pitchers and catchers. That's until the first spring training game. So the season is bearing down on us, and there's been so little movement.
exactly. So if you imagine you're a Mets fan before, again, 12 hours, 8 hours ago, right? Well, I don't know, something like that. And you know, you really wanted an upgraded catcher. You got one in James McCann, but you know, but there's JT Realmuto, who is likely the, you know, best catcher, consensus best catcher in baseball, and he's available for nothing but, you know, some
Nothing
assets
but
that Steve Cohen,
cash. Nothing but
so,
cash.
nothing but assets Steve Cohen insider traded for. You know what I mean? Like, that's all it costs, and a pittance of that. And you know, then, you know, and so they went with a, you know, with a good option. And I do believe McCann is a good player, and I do believe he's turned a corner, defensively especially, you know, which is, I think, the most crucial thing given, you know, both the Mets needs on defense and their, you know, and the importance of, you know, defense in the catcher position. But, like, but yeah, but he's not, I mean, he's not JT Realmuto. He doesn't have the track record, and that's why he got paid $10 million a year rather than 25, you know. And then, you know, and then of course they need, they, you know, but there was all, there was that was it basically. They got him. They got Trevor May, another good pitcher, good relief pitcher, but, like, you know, but not a extremely sexy move, you know, more of a, you know, of a just, you know, kind of like, you know, one of the things that every team ought to be doing, you know, frankly, Mariners, you know, as well, should be, you know, on the Trevor May types. But, like, they, you know, and that was it. And so so people were getting restless, as I think, you know, especially as you see the Padres, like, you know, swooping in and getting two ace caliber players in, like, the span of, like, you know, 30 minutes or something. Like, you know, I completely understand, you know, why it got there, or, you know, for at least for some folks. But, you know, but hey, good things happen to those who, I don't know. Nah, let's not go that far.
I would
It's still the
say
Mets,
good.
but
I would say that you know, they were smart to wait it out. But I kind of feel like it was the opposite a little bit. Like, he took advantage of a very slow-moving market. And I think Cleveland, every day that passed, was getting closer to them coming to this crunch time of, like, having to make a move on. And I didn't realize that Carrasco was coming up on his, what do they call it? The
10-5 rights?
The 10-5 rights, yes, thank you. So the pressure is on them. It's definitely on Steve Cohen, too, but he's got a... I feel like the owners have the upper hand, and the teams that really want to sell off pieces, want to cut payroll, they're at the disadvantage. And I really feel like Cohen was probably the first one who came to them with a reasonable trade package that fit Cleveland's needs. We heard a lot from Mariners fans like, well, the Mariners could have done this. Yes, the Mariners theoretically could have matched the trade price for Lindor, and obviously that would have been incredible. But number one, you have to have some kind of indication that he's going to stay, which is important for the Mariners because they're not going for it all this year. They're trying to build something longer term. So you need to have a guarantee that he would have stayed, which, you know, I don't think he should promise anyone that he's going to stay. But and then also, like, the kinds of prospects that Cleveland sought. Cleveland has a player type. They like high contact infielders. They like young prep prospects, not just like prep prospects, but like guys who are on the very youngest end of that, because they need to be able to control them for a long time so that they don't have to pay them money. So that's not like what's outfielders. In Seattle's system. What's that?
they apparently don't like outfielders still.
No, that part is weird. Like
the last 3 years.
That part is weird, especially because their like best prospect coming up is an infielder. I mean, I think Nolan Jones is... There's talk about him having to move to the outfield just because he's so big. Like, he's maybe too big for third base. But it's curious. But definitely, like, what the Mariners have in their prospect stock is not a match for what Cleveland wants. What they have is a bunch of high-floor pitchers. And honestly, Cleveland has that. They're able to develop that. So not every team was a good match for trade partners with Cleveland. I think Cohen just really did a good job of exploiting a window where not much was happening. There's maybe some level of desperation in Cleveland, and he was able to bring a package that matched what Cleveland wants.
Yeah, Kate, I have a question for you, because my gauge on like how good a prospect outside the Mariners system is basically boils down to, have I heard of them? And I had not heard of any of the Mets prospects that Cleveland received. So like, what is it like a... Like, is there any way to construe this as like, oh, maybe this could be a decent trade for Cleveland? Like, are any of these guys like capital D dudes, or are they all just kind of like, you know, the 6th to 12th best prospects in that system?
I mean, I'll definitely defer to Bradford on this because, you know, my knowledge of the Mets prospect system is kind of weak and limited to just my overall knowledge of the draft. Plus, obviously, John Troupen, who should be here tonight to talk about this. He knows way more about this than I do. What he has kind of told us. Andres Jimenez, the shortstop, is, I think, being talked about as the big name in it, and has been around. Like, people do know who he is. He's in prospect circles. He's MLB adjacent. Like, he's had some time. So I think a lot of people are pinning the success of the deal to him. I really like Isaiah Green, who they got as who is that high upside prep outfielder, toolsy type, beautiful swing, contact oriented. A project, but like I definitely really liked him, and I think they got good pieces. I think it was a fair valuation. I was surprised there weren't like lottery tickets thrown in, like a couple DSL, like, you know, very far away type guys. So I thought it was a little short on that end, but I didn't see it as a prospect overpay or underpay severely one way or the other. What did you think, Bradford?
I am of the opinion that it was quite an underpay, actually. I'll tell you why. This is, you know, like, really no shade to any of the four players involved, right? Andres Jimenez is the player most likely to have a successful big league career because he has a defense, a carrying tool defense. You know, he's a good defender at shortstop, and he hit decently. You know, and you know, as a rookie in 2020, but like you know, but he does not have a lot of projection as bad. So like you know, so like a decent glove, you know, a good you know, a rather good glove, decent bat, shortstop, useful, above average regular, sure, right? Amed Rosario is extremely toolsy, and he's still only 25. But he's like, you know, bad, like as a major leaguer, like he just, he's, you know, he really is. And, you know, he was pretty, you know, he was, he showed some promise last year in 2019, you know, but most of his career has been one, you know, very frustrating. He's not a good enough hitter to demand lineup, demand the bats in the lineup. He's not a consistent enough defender to demand time as a reserve. So what does it, what does Amed Rosario do for you? You know, and like, and he's, you know, I mean, at this point, obviously now he gets to go. He can go to second base rather than shortstop, which could help him. Given that he's, you know, despite his tools and athleticism, he has not been, you know, a particularly adept shortstop. But like, but you know, but that's a, you know, that's a problem. Like, you know, to me, as far as you know, it, if he's like the biggest upside play at the moment, you know, given that he was a very highly touted prospect, like, you know, like right next to Gleyber Torres, but you know, back in, you know, the 2016.
Yeah, I think it's fair to call him a post-hype prospect.
Yeah. Post-hype is right. So he's a major leaguer, but like, you know, yeah. but he's not one any you know, I think people will be clamoring for unless they really have a high degree of confidence that they can extract, you know, or and help him become the best, his best self, you know. Which you know,
happens, you know, we saw that with J.P. Crawford coming to Seattle and them ironing out his defense. And, you know, the bat, I think, is still an issue, but he's a gold glover.
Yeah, and that's true. But, like, you know, and regarding Crawford, of course it happens. But, like, you know, Rosario lost his job. Like, he was a starting shortstop and he lost it to him and his, you know, who's pretty good, but he's not, a world beater.
I'm willing to extend a little bit to him just because I feel like the Mets have been so dysfunctional that any prospect coming up in that, I'm serious, like, that organization has felt dysfunctional in just in, like, what the players say about it for such a long time that I'm willing to, like, extend a certain amount of credit to a player who hasn't been successful coming up through that system.
And you know what? I think that's a fair point, Kate, about the, you know, about the Mets player development needing work. But at the same time, they've also developed a number of really good players that are on the lineup right now, in Jeff McNeil, Pete Alonso,
right.
You know, Dom Smith. You know, those are three likely well above average hitters. You know, that all, you know, that deserve a lineup spot anywhere. You know, and that's just in the last, like, you know, 2 years. You know, of the Mets, you know, the Mets, and I say that with, you know, all the totally valid critiques about their, you know, about their organization pre-Cohen, right? And then the prospects that the actual, like, you know, minor league dudes. One is a second rounder, you know, who so you know, promised talent, but like we literally have not seen him play baseball because of COVID, you know. And you know, the other, again, you know, like I mean, it's not a overwhelming package given what they are getting to their team, you know. Which is, again, one of the, you know, you can count with two hands, maybe even one, you know, better players. Definitely, like, players who you are sure are better than Francisco Lindor, sure. You know?
Like, and the Mets didn't have to give up, like, Pete Crow Armstrong is still a bet. I love Pete Crow Armstrong. Yeah. And talk about a carrying tool, like, that kid can defend anything. And he's a great personality. And honestly, I'm glad he's staying with the Mets. I feel like they couldn't have let him go, or it would be like shades of Jared Kelnick all over again. I think Jared Kelnick is a way better hitter than... I think Kelnick's going to be a better hitter than Pete Crow Armstrong, but...
Honestly, if they gave up Pete Crow Armstrong, it would feel like, it would at least, this would feel a little bit better, honestly.
As far as
equivalence, you know.
But the conversation would have been not at all about the steal. Like, I think generally this is regarded as a steal for the Mets.
It is, yeah, and then we're not even discussing Carlos Carrasco, who is again like a bona fide frontline starting pitcher. Like, you know, maybe people were forgetting this because of, you know, him missing 2019, you know, essentially because of cancer. But he came back and he was quite good again, you know, as good as he's always been, you know, almost like boringly good, boringly very good, you know, and there's just not that many B+, like, you know, you're getting a B+ starter type starters out there, which is why they tend to make a lot of money. Anybody, and he's not making a lot of money at all. He's making like $12 million a year relative, you know, which is obviously more money than I'll ever see in my life. But like, relative to the production that he and value that he offers to the teams he plays for, it is a pittance, you know, for what he's done for like the last 5 years. You know what
it
I mean?
Is truly depressing to think about Carrasco and all that goodwill built up between the fan base and him, and him kind of signing these team friendly deals to come back, and just to be rewarded by, and you know, maybe ultimately I like to look at these things as good for the player. Like, he gets to go play for a contender. And somebody, yes, people were willing to spend money, and, you know, I think he'll be a lot happier, but it's a really shitty way to reward someone for being loyal and putting a lot of their own energy, emotional energy, into connecting with the fan base, which you don't have to do as a player.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm happy that Carlos gets to continue competing for title. And I should say that continue, because the Indians could have been a contender if they just ran it back.
Yeah, but, I was going to say.
We should definitely touch on that.
They were a good team. They have the best, like, probably the best pitching staff in the AL last year, at least, like, starting-wise. And then they decided that they, like, didn't want to ever do that again. You know, we've seen this a lot, and that's, like, kind of the bummer. Like, we're talking about, like, oh, Steve Cohen, like, what a great owner. And, like, literally all he's doing is trying to win, which is a lot now, but, like, the bar is just so low that, like, if you acquire a player rather than salary dump, then all of a sudden you're, like, it's almost like the new market inefficiency is just trying.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, you saw their limitations, really, you know, like in the postseason when the Yankees just throttled them, you know, and that, you know, but that's not to say that they're a bad team either, you know. And they're, you know, they were a good team. They still have, you know, a pretty young nucleus of, like, you know, a really good pitchers, you know, of really good players. And all they really need to, like, to be, again, like in the inner circle of World Series contenders is just, like, signing for a real outfield. Like, honestly, the three of us here, if they split, if we got to split one, you know, major league minimum salary, we might help them take a step forward, you know, as a team. But, you know, but Cleveland has cheaped out on, you know, on this kind of thing for forever. But, like, you know, but certainly, you know, the last 4 years as their, you know, as their star players have, like, reached arbitration and, you know, and demanded salaries that are just starting to approach the value that they offer to their team, you know, and that's when they leave. And so I really, you know, I mean, given where Cleveland's place was on the win curve, you know, given that the present value they are, you know, that Lindor and Carrasco offered them, you know, and that there is no player here that screams the next Francisco Lindor or even the next Carlos Carrasco, like, screams, you know what I mean? Like, they're not like, oh yeah, this happens, you know, because anything can happen, right? But yeah. Like, you know, but no one that they got back, you know, says, oh yeah, we've successfully done that, you know, it's very frustrating. And the only way that this team that this is there are two ways that this is a, with the largest scare quotes ever, you know, a win. Are two things. One, Cleveland is a development powerhouse, and so they, you know, they do tend to extract the best out of, you know, the young talent that they have there, not in their outfield. so no one's perfect, but again, you know, but for the most part, you know, they do that very well, especially of course with their pitching talent. So, you know, maybe they help these guys become become their best selves, and Amed Rosario and Jimenez are all stars by in a year and a half or something. But that's one. And the other thing is honestly just the very broken economic structure, I guess, which is a full circle back to, like, you know, state of baseball as you teed me up, right? But, like, you know, but the fact that it might, that for teams, for a lot of teams, it's rational to have cost controlled, like, eyedness over like,
I think that is a technical term, cost controlled eyedness. I believe that's Jerry DePoto's philosophy, actually. There's a lot of eye on the Mariners.
Right. Over like true, like, true excellence, like that's, that what all that means is that the economic structure is paying Andrés Giménez too little, frankly. If anyone could call this, could call this a win, certainly the minor leaguers, who are paying nothing, but like, but that, all that means is that there are four players who are being exploited, if they, if, if this trade could be, could ever shake out to being even, given how good Lindor and Carrasco are. Like that's my take on this, like, and I think it's, kind of similar to the whole Mookie Betts situation, back last year, in where, of course he was, the new Red Sox administration was immediately slammed for trading him and David Price and a naked salary dump. But I would say the prospects they got back, the prospects, the young players they got back are better than what than what the Mets did. I mean, rather what Cleveland did. But, shoot, I mean, they, like if there, if there is a, any sort of logic, there appears to be a logic, within the league, that that cost controlled, access to, to players who are fine but not great, or have the potential to be fine, which are like these minor leaguers that are being exchanged, that is, that is more valuable than a superstar. Like, and that's the case, and something is like badly amiss, So yeah, I'm not. I'm happy for Mets fans who are long suffering, I'm not, I'm concerned as far as like a matter of like, putting a thermostat out into the, or, a thermometer, the state of like baseball or Major League Baseball, as to like what's going on with, when your best players, are, when good teams don't want their best players.
Please, my baseball, it's very sick.
Yes.
Bradford, do you see any end in sight to this trend? Because you, I mean, you spoke to Francisco Lindor in real life, or I guess over Zoom at the end of last year's playoffs in a clip that I love where you just asked him straight up, like, should Cleveland spend more money? And he just laughed. Like, he knew that that was never going to happen. And it seems like, we've Mookie Betts, David Price, like, the Cubs are probably going to do it with Chris Bryant. Like, there's a lot of teams who are just following this trend of, like, this player is simply too good and costs too much money. We don't want him anymore. And like that, you can say that like there is some strategic value to it, but for the fans and for people who like those players, it sucks a lot. So like, do you think that anything will, I mean, obviously these things always are kind of cyclical, but do you think there will be like some big watershed moment where like this stops, or are we just going to see this for like 3 more years until something, until it kind of circles back?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, the strategic value is there, but it's irrational, and it's arbitrarily engineered. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's a difference between it being like a normal sort of like truly free and open market, where like where people are paid commensurate to their worth, but it is structurally built in. So that a team could quote unquote win a deal when they trade their best player, and so I mean,
It's a
I
feature,
see,
not a bug.
yeah, exactly. Well said. And so I think like if there, I think man, if there is going to be a change, it's going to probably come in labor negotiations. Like I think there, I think that obviously there's a lot of acrimony right now, between, the players union and and the owners after the last few years, really since, frankly, since the last contract they signed, that was a raw deal and poorly negotiated.
But I
You
think
know, but
this summer too, like with the negotiations about getting back on the field and the, that was real, that turned a corner, I think, in ugliness in the relations that we hadn't seen before.
yeah, and it's really does seem from my conversations around the league like that players are more attuned to this than they once were. Like, it's funny even that Lindor said what he did, to me, back, back in October after the Cleveland got swept. Because there was a really good article in Sports Illustrated in about the summer of 2019, I'm sure you remember this. It was from Stephanie Epstein, who's, you know, columnists I really do enjoy. But like, but Stephanie, you know, spoke to a bunch of players at the All-Star game, and she basically found that like all these guys just like did not have any sort of like clue about like the basics of, you know, the union and the union priorities, which is like a really bad sign given that they were like not too far away from a gigantic fight. You know, and this is the summer of 2019. This is right after Bryce Harper, Manny Machado got like squeezed out until, you know, late into spring training. So it's on, you know, like there was a lot of concerning, you know, signs happening. And like, and one of the players that as I recall, she interviewed was Francisco Lindor, who did not know, basic things about kind of like, again, what the union, you know, the union's messaging. And, so for him to go from that to, this is a $1 billion team, a direct quote. did you see the TV deal they just signed? You know, like just kind of like letting the chopper spray. Like it shows that like something has clicked over the last 18 months that, you know, that led him to, you know, educate himself as to what was going on, you know, around the league and how that impeded himself and perhaps, you know, his colleagues.
It's challenging as a baseball player. Like, you already have to be an expert on baseball. Like, that takes literally all your time. Like, there should be, I don't know, I feel like it should be part of your representation. Your representation should be telling you about things outside of just, like, looking out for your own career and, like, here's how to look out for baseball as a whole. Here's how to look out for the interests of your, like, fellow players. Like, here's what you should be agitating for. And there just aren't enough players who I think are schooled in that, especially because you have so many of them who didn't even go to college. Like, I don't have enough players who are schooled in the art of labor relations.
Yeah, and I wouldn't really expect them to either.
No,
the
nor
thing.
Should
like,
it
know,
be their job, but they're at a disadvantage.
Like, yeah, I know that it's like a concern when I remember that article too, with the players basically saying like, we have no idea what any of this means. Like, hopefully it'll figure itself out. Like, that is concerning, obviously. But at the same time, like you said, Kate, like, these are athletes. Like, they're not businessmen. You know, their job is to go play baseball. If they don't understand, you know, the basics of labor negotiations, that's probably more a failure of the system. Or, like, the classic problem that a lot of America faces where it's like, this is too confusing on purpose in, like, a way that excludes people intentionally, which I think is also mostly what's happening here. But at the same time, like, with baseball and where we're at right now, it feels so bleak except for the, like, really rich teams, which is also, like, you know, it's always been the problem. But to finish one of your thoughts from earlier, Bradford, it seems like good things come to people who just work for really rich companies. Like, that's been the Dodgers way and now the Mets. And, like, that's how it's going to unfold for a while. Unless you can...
The Red Sox. Anyone who's just willing to say F the luxury tax, basically, right?
Yeah, or if you're the Rays and you have 19 relievers all at one time who throw 100, which does not... It's not a real, like, sustainable model.
And you pay a room full of analysts $35,000 a year each to teach you how to keep player salaries down.
Right.
Yeah. Unless you're running, like, a pyramid scheme. Like, and calling it baseball. There is,
are the Rays not a pyramid scheme? Feels like the Rays are a pyramid scheme.
Yeah, it's like the illest, you know, MLM campaign, you know? Like, you know, you become a Rays fan and then you get to, and you bring in two other Rays fans and, you know, and you tell them, oh yeah, don't worry. You know, we're trading, you know, your good player for 14 relievers, passing on. And you just keep on building and building it out until you eventually have 12 fans at Tropicana Field. That's a
slapdick prospect, too.
Yeah. So, I'm not sure how that pyramid schemes work because I'm not a corrupt person, but that's my, you know, that's my basic understanding.
You don't spend enough time on Instagram. Everyone on Instagram wants to, what is it, multi-level marketing? The nice mm-hmm. word for pyramid scheme.
Also, yeah. I just want to put this on the record real quick. I am mistaken because I don't believe Lindor was actually part of that interview. With Stephanie Epstein's article, though it's a very good article you should read. I just mistake because it happened to be taking place in Cleveland. So apologies, Francisco Lindor fan of Lookout Landing.
No, oh, yeah, definitely a listener.
Please return my call. Definitely listen. I know you've always been woke to the issues of the labor struggle in the United States. So, you know, I'll never again libel you. Anyway.
Yeah, speaking of pyramid schemes, especially the one in Tampa, they got rid of their best pitcher. They decided that they didn't want to do that anymore and decided to ship him to San Diego, which is so weird to me because, Kate, I mean, you probably relate to this, but like I've always seen the Padres as like the Mariners' cousin or like the Mariners of the National League. Like they are always doing pretty similarly to the Mariners. And like even when I lived in San Diego, like I would turn on Padres games just for the feeling of watching the Mariners. Like I didn't care about what was happening. I didn't care about who the Padres were starting in right field or whatever, but I was like, I like watching a team struggle to hit, and like it just looks nice on TV, you know. Feels it's more comforting. Of like the rhythms of it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But now beautiful all of a park. Sudden the Padres just had like a full makeover. They get new jerseys, they get Fernando Tatis, and now all of a sudden they're like the place to be, and that's going to be very hard for me to adjust to. But also the fact that they like the Mets are trying, and like that is basically 75% of their strategy here. So I think the NL West, like the Padres and the Dodgers are going to be like at each other's necks all season.
It's going to be so good.
But also like, I really just wish that we could abolish divisions now. You know what I mean? Like this problem speaks to like how dumb divisions are. I understand that like geography is a huge part of it, but
you're gonna have the Padres and Dodgers slugging it out, and then meanwhile in the AL Central, just like tumbleweeds.
I also, this is a whole other conversation. I don't know how it would work logistically, but I'm not super opposed to like a relegation zone like English soccer does, because like these teams that aren't trying need to be punished, you know. All they do is get rewarded with a better draft pick.
Bring me relegation, you know, like you get the worst sponsors, you know what I mean. You get Joe Jones Barbecue Foot Massage rather than, you know, State Farm. You get, you know, you
can I say something? I always say like relegate the whatever team. I don't understand relegation. Can you explain it to me like I'm five very quickly?
Well, yeah, in English soccer it works because they have multiple divisions.
I do
divisions.
Not watch soccer, so
I know, but I'm just to give you some context. They have like multiple divisions, so like it would be basically the same thing as if, so like the worst team in the English Premier League gets sent down to the second division, which would essentially be like the worst team in Major League Baseball getting sent to AAA. But the problem is the affiliations, right? So like you can't send the Mariners to AAA where they also have a team that they own down there, you know. So in like basically what would happen is the worst team gets sent to a lesser league and has to play down there instead. And I'm sure there's a lot of like money issues that come into that, you know. Like if you're in the lesser league, you're not making nearly as much money.
It
as
does
you are.
Feel like there would be, there should be a way to do that though in Major League Baseball. Like just make the shitty teams play each other all the time, and then the Mariners don't get their revenue from the Mariners playing the Yankees and the Red Sox and Seattle's huge contingents of Red Sox and Yankees fans.
Yeah, right. You know, it's like, you know, the Orioles, instead of playing the Yankees 22 times, you get to play them like 3.
Yeah.
You know?
No, seriously.
They're all in New York. Yeah. Like, you'd have to make a lot of rules.
You know what I mean? Like, the idea just of creating, of treating them like the second class citizens that they are of baseball, like, you know, these teams that tank. You know, maybe you have like, you know, I mean, I think teams just still play each other to some degree, like, you know, because it's still Major League Baseball, but like, but you have, you know, but perhaps the bad teams play good teams a little less at home, you know, for, you know, which has a financial component. You know, they play, you know, and then they have to, whatchamacallit, I don't know, maybe even have like a little like loser's cup, you know, at the end of the season. It's like, you know, like, oh yeah, we got Royals Pirates. Let's go, you know.
Oh my God, the Mariners would have so many loser's cups. We wouldn't be able to say they have the longest drought in professional sports anymore.
Joe Musgrove strikes out the side. He did it. He did it. He threw a small hitter.
I think we're kind of accidentally onto something here. Because I do like the idea of, like, a lot, like, you know, combine the lottery with, like, a play-in tournament. So, like, instead of just the worst team getting the number one pick, what if you took the teams that finish with the 8 worst records and then make them actually play each other for the first overall pick. So there's actually incentive to win for the first pick rather than just suck all
year. Yes, totally agree.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like it would be like cute, you know, but also valuable, kind of like I guess, like, you know, like if like the G League, you know, an NBA trophy, like it mattered, you know, but like, you know, like, you know, that's kind of like what my ideal of like a relegation cup. So you have something that still interests your fan base, you know, of your trash teams, in case like they're just so stupid, you know, that they can never get out of poverty, of roster poverty, not like actual, you know, financial poverty. They're all rich, but you know, but if they you know, but just something to keep fan interest, you know, if you're relegated, you know, something that you know, that makes rebuilding a little more fun. You know, since sometimes it genuinely is a necessary process when everyone's 36 and sucks. I get it. You know?
Fans will not get, I mean, sometimes you have like Tank for Torque or, you know, Rock Bottom for Rocker or whatever, Fubar for Kumar, I think was the one. Like you have a certain number of fans who will get in on that and like know who the top overall draft pick is. But like,
they're all dorks.
If you're in number 5 or something, you're still shitty, but you don't have, like, the catchy hashtag. So, like, you can just tell fans, like, you're excited about getting a good draft pick, but then you give them still something to root for that's not a player who they probably don't know, don't care about. But they might care about the number 3 draft slot or the number 5 draft slot because they know they're going to get someone good. So,
yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right,
the worst thing you can be is kind of bad.
Yes,
that's right? Death in professional sports, as Mariners fans have learned. Like, you want to be the worst team or you want to be in the playoffs.
Yep.
There's no like benefit to being in the middle of.
There's
those
no
groups.
Benefit to being mediocre.
But you know, if I can push on that just a second, first for a second, because I think that is an overstated issue with Major League Baseball. And I say this obviously as someone who is not as experienced with this as a Mariners fan. Sorry, that was mean. But
no, it was accurate. Sometimes mean things are still true.
And we're immune to it. You can say whatever you want. Like,
but yo, I mean, like, my take is that baseball does not reward awfulness as much as other sports leagues do. Because the payoff, you know, the payoff from like when you tank and, you know, when those players actually develop takes such a long time, and there's so much more mystery involved in whether or not the player you draft is actually good. You know, there's less so because there's more information, more, you know, more tools and devices which to judge, you know, top high school and college talent or, you know, international science, whatever, you know, but for tanking anyway, it's a draft, right? So. That's not even relevant in international science. But yeah, so, you know, there is more, you know, there's more information available, but there's still a whole lot of mystery, you know, like, the, you know, play, you know, it is not nearly as linear, you know, drafts aren't nearly as linear as an NBA or NFL. And there's no, and the payoff is not immediate, you know. I think that the Cubs and the Astros are honestly fairly anomalous in baseball history of terrible teams, perpetually terrible teams actually coming away with something good. And the Astros messed up a lot of draft picks. Correa was good, but like a lot of their top first rounders were not. And also,
yeah, the Astros just had so many picks that like law of averages kind of said they're gonna hit on some of them.
They fucked one up so bad that they got another one.
Yes, which honestly was kind of brilliant because that one, I think that's the one that turned into Correa, right? Didn't the Aiken pick turn into Correa?
Maybe, or Bregman, maybe one of.
Oh yeah,
two.
Bregman. I think it was Bregman.
Yeah. So myself. I mean, like. You know, but there's a lot that went wrong, and then you know, they did some other stuff too to grease the wheels there. But like, you know, but if you look at like, you know, the Royals from like, you know, 1986 basically until when they, you know, won the pennant, like they picked top 10 all the time, you know, like constantly, and, you know, and they occasionally got, you know, great players like Zach Greinke and, you know, whatnot, you know, from their first rounders, but like, you know, they were not a you know, that team that took a very long time for them to actually, you know, develop a nucleus. I think that to use the counterexample, as far as like, you know, being like okay and respectable, like truly okay and truly respectable, is that like, you know, is that the variance in baseball allows you to actually take a leap sometimes, just because, you know, some people break out that year, or it's a dead cat bounce or whatever, you know. And when that happens, anything can happen once you reach the playoffs. You know, the best on paper team does not always win, you know. And we saw that problem recently with you know, the problem to me of the logic of, you know, of being like just okay, of thinking that you're just okay and not, you know, and not good enough to actually win a playoff round as recently as 2019, when, you know, when the Phillies were like, you know, actively signaling, you know, like we're not going to improve, you know, our core, you know, in, you know, via trade, because we don't want to lose to the Dodgers. The Diamondbacks did almost the exact same thing, you know. They didn't say it outright. Say it as outright as the Phillies apparently were, to like Ken Rosenthal sources or whatever. But like, you know, and they chose to, you know, to retool, and they got like super hot actually, ironically, after making the team worse, and almost stole a playoff spot. But the team then actually got that seed that the Phillies and Diamondbacks did not want was the Nationals. And what the Nationals do, they won the World Series.
Right.
Like, you know, and of course they had a lot of high end talent, but that was a flawed team, which is why they started off so bad and why they were terrible last year. Like, you know, they were not completely Teflon. They just won, you know. And baseball is not a sport where, like, you know, where the best, where the most talented team does not always win. You know, sure. I don't want to say best because ultimately, you know, you got to win those rounds, but like. But the most on paper talented team does not always win. I remember the 06
Cardinals.
I mean,
we have the 2001 Mariners as like the big object lesson in that.
Right, right. I mean, but straight up, I mean, like, you know, like the Yankees were not a bad team. Of course, you know, obviously they were still a dynasty, but they were old. They were, you know, they were being propped up by basically just signing free agents essentially. But the core, you know, at that point was aging tremendously, and they lost like 21 more games than the Mariners until the ALCS. Like, I mean, you know, they actually pulled that same trick the year before, because that Yankees team won like 86 games or something like that, or 87. They seemed to be in their last gasp at one point that year. I remember that very vividly, because, you know, like, and then they actually won the whole thing. They beat three teams with better win loss records than them. Like,
And they got rocked by the Diamondbacks. People forget that. Like, the scoring differential was crazy. People think it was a close series because it went seven games. But the Diamondbacks, all of their wins besides the last one were huge blowouts.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if you just, like, if they just pitched someone besides Byung-Hyun Kim, that game, that series is over in four, you know, like, or five or something. Like, but you know, I mean, like, that, that's endemic to the sport of baseball. You know what I mean? Of the not always best team winning, you know? It is not like the NBA where, like, it don't matter if you know that if you have LeBron James, if you have Steph Curry, you know, you are the favorites. It is not, you know, it's not like the NFL where if you have the better quarterback, you are a heavy favorite. You know what I mean? Baseball is just like, it's just not like that. And I think there's more to be said about like trying to be decent, putting on a reasonable sort of like show for your fan base and the sort of like disgustingly poor, bad tanking that you see from the Astros and now the, you know, like the Orioles now, you know what I mean? Like I would, as a fan of the game, I would much rather my team, you know, try and win 70, you know, and see what happens rather than
35.
Yeah. I will take that any day.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com. Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
I will say, I think it's unfortunate that the Mariners and they're tanking. I mean, they're tanking. They've dressed it up in nicer words than that, but they've basically said we're not going to be competitive in 2019, 2020. It's unfortunate that that happened after, a few years of really trying to go for it. Like, they tried in 2016, in 2017, in 2018. Like, they really made a good faith effort to get good players in. I don't know that they ever did enough, to really get over the hump, but they did try. And now that they have taken this step back, it happens to be at a time where a lot of other teams are doing that, and the discussion of tanking is good. So I've always felt a little hey, now, the Astros got to do this for years. We should have a little bit of a time to, because sometimes that is how you can put a good product on the field, but especially when most free agency deals were for, a lot of them were really long. And I don't think we're going to see, except for that upper crust, these 7, 8, 10-year deals anymore. It just seems like something that the sport in general has moved away from. So, yeah.
And Kate, honestly, I would even argue that the Mets are very similar to the Mariners as far as the kind of okayness that they perpetuate in. They're always a 75-80, or have been always been a 85 win team in the post Madoff era. And sometimes they collapse, sometimes they win a pennant. But I think that, if the Wilpons are still around, and the Wilpons think a lot more like typical baseball owners, can Steve Cohen.
The coupons.
And again, they're embarrassing, but I think it's an indictment of the league because they operate very similarly as far as the investment in the Mets as a baseball team, versus versus a money, complex money accounting scheme, if you were to look at this team before some of the recent deals, I think that there would be a very compelling argument for for rebuilding right now. So many of their good players are either old, Jacob DeGrom, obviously one of the best pitchers in baseball, but he's 33 or going on 34. Or approaching their arbitration or final years, like Michael Conforto, they keep on winning, they keep on not winning enough. And they had a bunch of, free agents, guys like Marcus Stroman, who he ended up accepting qualifying offer, there was a lot of potential turnover, and a lot of guys who were starting to get paid a lot more, I think that, there are a lot of teams out there who would have said, okay, it's time to sell.
Right. They're also lucky that they're in a division with the Phillies, who have very helpfully just turned over and shown their bellies.
But then at the same time, they also have the Atlanta Braves, who are a inner circle favorite, and still better than them, in my opinion. Until proven otherwise. You could disagree with me, but I think it's obviously much closer, much closer. But I think I think the Braves have a better pitching staff, even with DeGrom, just because they have a lot. I think they have a lot more ace level talent. They're not depending as much on people coming back and being totally fine from Tommy John, per se. Noah Syndergaard, they have, the Mets can make more moves, to be clear. So things aren't over yet,
interestingly, we actually have something about that, as apparently there's a rumor that the Mets have talked to the Mariners about Kyle Seager.
What?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah,
is this coming across right now?
Well, it just got posted in our Slack a little while ago. Matthew, I've been kind of sitting on it for a while waiting for a point to insert it. And I mean, let's be clear, this is not a blue check necessarily that's saying it, but it is somebody who knew, who got the Flexen to the Mariners deal, correct?
Executive somebody editor for Metsmerized, boy Michael Mayer.
Michael Mayer gets scooped sometimes, guys. So that's not,
he's got a Joey Gallo, can hit it out of the park, but also can whiff. So pretty big. But yeah, I think it's I wouldn't have brought it up if I didn't think it was at least credible. And also, I just want to say, like, there's definitely, I think probably the Mets have talked to everyone. Jerry DePoto has probably talked to everybody about Kyle Seager, yeah, because that's his job, right? Is to,
that's true. Yeah.
And,
that's true.
And also, but also his passion to talk to people about trades.
He's not,
and loves phone calls.
He's not just a president. He's also a client. Yeah. He loves being on the phone and being active. I'm sure it's frustrating to him that he can't be consistently dealing away player. You know, he's just in a position with the club right now where they don't have to make all those nutty trades that he was making over the first,
yeah, few, well, now years. He just has his guys too. Like, everyone, yeah, in the organization now is a Jerry DePoto acquisition. Yeah. And I think,
like,
that
he just
really changed things for
him. He con-Marie'd out the entire organization, and now that's left, it's all his favorite pieces, and yet he's still dissatisfied somehow.
Yeah. We're in a weird place. I mean, like you said, everyone who's been, like, every team is trying to get so much worse that we created this weird situation where the Mets and the Padres are, like, the most fun teams in the league. Although I know, Kate, you would argue that Blake Snell is actually not that fun. And maybe one day we will have to storm City Hall and Shoreline, demand to know why Blake Snell talks like that.
Why does Blake Snell talk like that? No one from here talks like that.
I want to know. I want to know his life. I want the Blake Snell. I want the 5-part Netflix docuseries about how Blake Snell developed that black accent. I want to know.
Such,
you know, when he said, man, when he said, you know, I don't want to gash that Rona, I was like, oh my God.
Yes. No one, I mean, no one from here talks like this. We have one of the flattest accents. I mean, they prize.
Yeah. No, college professors thought I was Canadian.
Yeah, like. It's, like, bro, I'm from Queens. I don't talk like that. Like,
well, and the other thing about Snell, there's an Athletic article that, like, I think it was from a couple years ago, probably when he signed his extension, where they, like, did the whole story on his whole life. And there's one part in there about how during the summers he would work as, like, a dockhand at a marina, like, truly the whitest job you could ever have. And somehow along the way he developed, like, a weird sort of, like, you know, like, trying to be hood accent. That's, like, pretty clearly,
yeah,
what it is. Like,
yes,
he thinks,
oh,
it's a cool thing to do.
Yes.
Like, that's not natural. That was him waking up one day deciding, I'm going to talk like this.
It's like how, I mean, a lot of 15-year-old white suburban boys talk, to be honest. And Shoreline,
yeah, it's a
Malibu's suburban,
most wanted situation.
Yeah. Like, it is definitely, like, a little bit of an act. And I wonder, my question is, like, I wonder if he talks like that every day in his personal life. Like, is that how he talks to his mom and stuff? Or, like, is that just what he does when the cameras are on, when he's in front of people? Like, is that kind of his shield in some ways? Which is still super problematic.
Should he go full, like, Hilaria Baldwin, guys, you think?
Oh, my God.
Like... You know, my grandpa Jamal, like, yeah, he'd always say, you know, like, just like slide it in one day and see what happens, see how far it goes.
Oh my God, Blake Dolezal,
a true,
for sure.
An interesting test will be, because I, as someone who lived for a little bit in San Diego, like, Dago is the cool, like, hip name for it, like, you know, heavy air quotes, like, the urban way to refer to it. If he starts referring to San Diego as Dago, we'll have all the evidence we need.
I'll give my one brief defense of a white person. And I apologize in advance for, you know, for betraying my loyal fans who don't expect this from me. But, like, Blake, when he did that Rona thing, I was eagerly Googling. I texted John Troop immediately, actually. Be like, oh, what's going on with this dude? But apparently he was, you know, a very involved basketball player, you know, as well, growing up. And I do wonder if that was, you know, if just kind of like, you know, I think the love of hip hop as well, you know, like,
yeah,
effect on that, like, you know, like, you know, may have had, you know, and surrounding himself with
but Tyler Glass now, like, Tyler Glass now has just as many, if not more, hip hop credibility than,
oh,
well,
so
I
much
mean,
more,
well, yeah,
so
but,
much
well,
more,
and he talks
but,
like, you know,
he talks
a
like
white
Tyler.
Person.
Like, he talks, yeah, he talks like a Tyler. I know.
He talks like a Tyler.
But Tyler, why, can't believe we're talking about this right now. This is a state of it right now, but probably it's fine. Tyler tattooed himself.
Yeah, he's really about it.
Hip hop reference, but nobody did it because a black teammate said, "You don't like hip hop." And he's like, "Nah, man, nah, bro." and then he got the tattoo. So, I mean, we're going to talk about performativeness. Like,
Kate, was it Gene Machi, Kate, who referred to all the white guys on the Rangers Tyler? As Tyler?
Yes. I mean, to be fair, he had like two or three teammates who were named Tylers at the time. But yeah, all white dudes were Tylers.
So as long as Blake Snell understands, you know, certain cultural lines not to be crossed, And I'm going to keep an open mind.
Cultural appreciation versus appropriation.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say the way he talks is pretty clearly appropriative, but who knows? Maybe I appreciate you extending that to him, that maybe he did just come up with that in the YMCA up in Shoreline. I mean, Bradford, please come out and visit someday. I will drive you to Shoreline and we can...
It's deep, too. It's as north as you can get, like the wrong way that you
expect. It is literally
expect.
Canada.
well, he coaches high school basketball out there, or youth basketball out there. So, well, apparently in the off seasons, I was in deep.
Oh my god, I really. You know who else coaches youth basketball is? New Mariners reliever Keenan Middleton. I would love for their teams to meet.
Yes, I just want to see Blake in the wild. Yes, you. I'm just saying is that it's very possibly true. Cultural appropriation is rampant within American life. You know. I mean,
all right, get the New York Daily News to fly you out here, and we'll set it up.
we've seen plenty of white dudes with tweets from high school saying the N-word or something. So like, I believe me, I'm not disabused of the notion. I'm not naive. I don't think I am, but like I want to see it in the wild. I want to see him in the wild for like 24 hours to see when it comes, when it drops, you know.
We can arrange this. The other thing you should know is literally every dude who has ever played a sport at all around like sort of the Shoreline / North Seattle area in the years 2009 to 2013 has a Blake Snell story. Like everybody has a story about Blake Snell. So I've heard some of them. So that's something else. We could probably do, get The Athletic to let you write an oral history. They love that shit. do an oral history of people who've played in sporting competitions against Blake Snell. I bet we can get to the root of that accent.
It's way better than my story. My only brush with future major league players was Reese McGuire, the guy who got arrested for jacking off in his car. That's all I have to offer to this.
I think you have more to offer, like including the story behind this.
Well, he just grew up around here, and we played baseball against each other. And then, you know, he went on to bigger and better things, and I forgot about him until it was actually my dad. My dad texted me. He's like, didn't you play against this kid? And I was like, oh, yeah, I remember him. He was really good. Like, I remember him kicking our ass. And then fast forward 10 to 12 years, whatever, and he's in a unfortunate situation in like broad daylight in a parking lot at like 9 a.m. That was my favorite detail. It was really early in the morning.
Ooh, my favorite detail was it was outside of a Dollar Tree, if I'm not mistaken, which is my favorite detail about the story.
I don't kink shame. You know, whatever he's into is fine.
So, you have any more questions for me about the state of baseball?
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
Baseball podcast.
Bradford, what are the Mariners going to do this year? We can end on a brief, very brief Mariners conversation. Do you have any expectations for our guys?
Well, you know, I mean, I think one of the cool things about this year is, you know, for the Mariners purposes, is that the West seems wide open. Clearly the Astros are not... are not seriously pursuing George Springer. They are a year older. You know, fortunately, some of their other young MVP candidates like Correa and Bregman are young, but they won't have Justin Verlander next year. They do have a young rotation that has some promise, but they're But they're not the Sherlock that they used to be. You know, similarly the A's, you know, they're losing Hendricks, probably losing Semien, losing Hendricks. They are, appear to be possibly taking a step back. The Rangers seem to have no direction as a franchise at this point.
No direction.
They're easily the most confusing team in the league.
Yeah. I'm not totally anti-rebuilding. Like, and the Rangers are clearly an example of it's just not working. You know, shut it down and invest in young players. You know, like, that's fine. Like, to me, when you see the Mariners starting to develop, a little bit of nucleus. You know, they have the Rookie of the Year. They have, they have a young rotation that shows a promise. Like, they have the money to go out and say, re-sign, Walker. You know what I mean? Like, the big hole is the easiest hole to fill in this free agency class, which is the bullpen. If the Mariners, for a modest investment, given that the Cleveland just straight up cut Brad Hand, but a modest investment in a few top shelf relievers, they just went Hand Hendricks, could be a pretty clear path to a 6-8 win kind of boost, just there. Cause again, the pen was so bad last year. I'm definitely a believer in the Mariners having a real puncher's chance and taking a leap into being one of the top six teams, in baseball if they play this free agency right.
Oof.
That's all we needed to hear.
I love that. I don't think any more big moves are on the horizon for them. Hopefully,
no, I don't think so either.
I'm sure they're letting Walker explore his market. I feel like there's a chance he comes back. I also feel like there's a chance the Jays go after him. I think whoever loses out on Trevor Bauer is going to look at Taiwan and kind of that tier. Because, I don't know, Bauer's probably the best of the free agent pitchers out on the market still.
Yeah. I think... Putting
I don't think he'll come to Seattle. I don't think Seattle will sign him. So,
yeah, putting my personal distaste aside for him, he's in all likelihood, given the last three years if you put the last 3 years all together, he is the best talent available. In as far as starting pitch, free agent starting pitches go. So I don't expect him to play in a Bauer team, but I see good young talent. I think Kyle Lewis has a pretty high ceiling, honestly, given how much of a late bloomer he was, and even when you hear him talk about his experience and ways he was denied opportunities, often in very racially, racialized mm-hmm. ways, the fact that he's actually getting a chance, getting full investment and a chance to shine, to me portends a really, good long career out of him and maybe another level too, as far as, just a, particularly on defense, given that he's athletic, I just think that, perhaps bringing more reps and more, and more major league training,
it's definitely been good to see that he seems to have no ill effects from the injury, which honestly was probably a tendon or two away from being a total career ender. So he's a great story. And I think I don't think we expect Rookie of the Year out of all of our prospects, but the fact that one of them got there already just makes people in general feel warmer about the idea mm-hmm. that some of these guys are going to get up here and start to make some noise. And
I should have gone back and said the American League, not baseball, as far as the top six teams. So apologies again for misleading anyone, you look at the last, you look at all of the steps back happening, the regression happening around the league, it seems like there are wins to be gobbled, and if the Mariners hit the area that they need to hit, which is bullpen, in my opinion, shopping in that middle tier, I don't know if, Tanaka is a possibility, and this is totally unsourced. But we know about a lot of the top Japanese talents, they tend to want to be in places that have reasonable flights back home, and you know, and all, you know, and in communities, you know, where they're not the only one, like, you know, so, you know, I could imagine that being interesting, you know, an interesting option. I can imagine, you know, the Jago DeRizzi types, you know, being, you know, being real boost, but of course, you know, but it really is just like hitting that bullpen. I think, ups their floor more than, you know, I think people realize. And so I'm pretty, you know, I'm pretty interested in seeing what they, you know, them going for 82 wins and, you know, ending up with 89, you know, yeah. I could see that happening.
Which in this American League, depending on, or the American League West, at least, like, mm-hmm. the Astros, I think, are pretty definitively on the downside. As you said, the Rangers are a mess. The Athletics seem to be, I mean, they're going to do their Athletics thing. So basically that's what is already in house. It's the Angels that scare me the most in the division. And, you know, they're just kind of coming out of this wilderness that they've been wandering in for the Epler years. So I don't know. I mean, I think that there is a legit possibility that, like you said, with a bullpen upgrade, even though they're returning a lot of the same players they had last year, they're returning some guys who shouldn't have been at the major league level, but the circumstances, the no minor leagues kind of forced Evan White to be up all year. You know, they're going to bring up some talent. There's a chance that this team could surprise some people, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I sincerely believe that. And going to the Angels, I mean, like, they, you know, obviously, certainly, as far as, like, you know, nucleus, they have, you know, arguably
the nucleus.
Nucleus, you know, in you know,
if you the center respect, of like, the top, baseball
top,
universe.
Top three player. Yeah, potentially the top three players could all be, like, you know, be candidates, you know, like, next year. You know, with Adele plus the Rendon Trout, you know, duo, you know, they have, you know, the makings of just, you know, of a really great infield in that sense. But, like, you know, Fletcher, obviously, but you know, their pitching is still a total mess.
They have to get Bauer. Know, they have yeah. to.
Like, they're yeah, they actually need to, you know, to go and, you know, and shop at the top end of the pool and the mid and the mid tier and the bottom. Because they just have no, there's no resources. Right. And similarly, they don't, you know, they
I
don't
mean, the
have
Bundy,
a stand-up bullpen
The Bundy
either.
Pickup was annoyingly very good for them. I was annoyed at how well he did for them. I assume he'll probably return that. But he's middle of the rotation at best. Like, you've got to have something above him. They have to have Bauer. So I assume, like, a lot of the slowness is we're just waiting for the Angels. We're waiting for that chip to fall, I think, at least on the pitching side of the market. And things will pick up after that.
Yeah, I'm mostly just happy to hear Bradford say that the Mariners could be good, because I feel like that's what Mariner fans have been
yeah,
saying for
yeah.
a long time. So it's nice to get some
it's
validation.
Nice to hear it from the outside, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean I see what's happening, you know. I you know, they're not embarrassing, which is nice, and there is upside on a lot of, you know, parts of the roster, you know. Some of which is already starting to cash in, you know, like, you know, so there's a not embarrassing floor there. You know, there are wins to be had, because teams are not trying, many teams in the American League are not trying to win, and someone's got to win those games. And then, you know, and then they had, and I think the one that, like I mean, I'm really repeating myself, but like, but the, you know, but the easiest thing to do in baseball, as far as, like, you know, making a good team better, is like, is when you have a clear black hole, you know, and you know, the Mariners have one, and you know, and the players are out there for the getting, and they don't even cost that much this year,
right?
So,
and they've already, you know, addressed it in some ways. You know, they've picked up a couple pieces that are good pieces. So,
yeah. Well, Bradford, this was a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us and indulging us in all of our Mariner fan thoughts.
Absolutely.
And also, you know, giving us some much-needed perspective on the rest of the league. So I think it's very easy for us to just be Mariners all the time, especially when it comes to the National League. That's usually my blind spot. So we got our National League quotient for the year.
About the Yankees. I was going to ask Bradford all kinds of questions about the Yankees, but...
Well, they've done nothing worth discussing.
No, they haven't. So, I'm really enjoying seeing Yankees fans kind of melt down over how inactive they've been versus the Mets just like snatching that New York glory. That's a dynamic I'm very interested in following this year. So I'll be interested in reading your work on it.
Yeah, I can't say I'm excited to watch Team Sale, but like, you know, but I'm grateful to be paid to comment on it.
For sure.
So, in that sense, I'm excited. I'm excited too, you know.
For sure.
Before we let you go, let the people know where they can find you, where they can read your work and listen to you spout more takes at them.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm a columnist and reporter at the New York Daily News. You search my bio line there, you'll find me. I wrote about the Mets transaction today. I'm a poster. I got a poster's heart. You can read my posts at underscore @BEEWILLY at B Willie. That's a terrible Twitter name. I've always had terrible Twitter names because I can't, because there's actually this one account that has my initials, which I use, you know, which are in my byline, which is Bradford William Davis. So the BWD is out there, but someone is just like sitting on it. I'm sitting on it since like 2008. And, you know, I want to find them. So until then, you know, follow my bad Twitter handle or search my name or something and you'll see it. I'm out here. blogging about the local teams, but also about reporting on issues that go beyond just kind of how people are going to line up a 40-man roster. I'd say that's a whole lot of my niche, at the news. And so that's what I truly enjoy doing, not to say I don't love Fire and Takes, but my podcast is I co-host the 5 and 9 podcast with Craig Goldstein and Emma Bacciolari, over at Baseball Perspective. So, you can catch me there and you hear maybe even more stakes than what you heard tonight. So, it was a pleasure. Like you guys are, as far as Baseball Twitter goes, family, and I appreciate, you inviting me over. So.
We love having you over. Thank you for coming and spending some time with us.
Yeah, that was very nice of you to say. We feel the same about you. Any person listening who's on Twitter should definitely follow Bradford and join our little family here. I am on Twitter with a handle that still has numbers in it because I made it in high school. I live in fear of it every day. It's the same account I've had since I was a junior in high school, @mroberson22. Kate, you got your real name. I'm jealous of that one.
Have a ridiculous, hard to spell Germanic last name and see what happens. I don't know.
Well, thank you everyone for listening. Please read Lookout Landing. As Kate mentioned at the beginning, we have the 40 and 40 series coming out, so you can refamiliarize yourself with this 40-man roster before these spring training games show up.
Things are happening very soon. Time to put on your baseball hats, everyone.
Yes, but also please stay safe. Do not do anything that we would not do. That's probably all I'm going to say. And until next time, thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Bye. Maybe also don't do some stuff we would do.
That's for them to decide.